Okay, so now we have a very fascinating concept coming up here. So we have, in general, the idea that there will be four exiles that the Jewish nation will experience. Four, besides Egypt. You have to know if Egypt's a master one and it broke up into four. That's not for tonight. One of the ways to remember this is that right in the beginning of Shemos, I didn't do that, it's fine. And it says the Jews came to Egypt. The word came, Habo'im, is five letters. And the five letters, at least the four, fifth of how they read it, is an acronym of the four exiles. So Habo'im, Beis, is Babel, the Babylonian exile. That was 70 years. Aleph is Edom, Rome, which is today, which is hopefully ending soon, but it's been a long time. And the other ones are Yavon, I'm spelling out this word here, and Madai. That would be Persia and Greek. And they were like a little bit mixed in together over there. And those are the four major exiles. That's how we understand the world today. And we have to understand that within these exiles, the Zohar says that's the name of it, but that's not all it's about. The Zohar speaks about, which is not for tonight, maybe a different time, but it'll be hinted at tonight, is that really the final exile of Edom is going to be, Gemara really says this, but it's going to be a final war between Yishmael and Edom. Rome versus the Arabs will be a final war that's going to occur. That's an open Tosfos. You want to look it up, and Avodah Zarah, Sekhta Avodah Zarah, to be, I'm saying. Not the famous statement, 2b, but page 2b. 2b, when it discusses it, we'll get to maybe in a few minutes now, we'll discuss that as well. So we have to know there's four goals. Yes.
Is that Armageddon? Is that the same thing, or is that
It's, yeah,
that's the
within.
one that lasts like 7 minutes? The
Dude,
second.
that's a much later authority. The Vilna Gaon is the one based on, I'm not diminishing the Vilna Gaon, I want to make it home safe tonight. But the Vilna Gaon seems to say that that will be about 3.5 seconds, which at the time when he wrote that in the 1700s, most people were scratching their heads and saying, okay, this man has lost his mind. He's learning too much Torah. It's time to get out into the real world. But now, based on what we know about the world, 3.5 seconds seems like a little long. But hopefully, we will not get to the revelation that way. There are multiple ways to get there, and there is a less tragic way to get there of how to greet the Messiah through our merits, and then it becomes an easier pathway. That's the beginning, the open introduction. But I want to discuss what we came off of now, that's why I thought of it, in the Megillas Esther. In Megillas Esther, multiple times, it says the words that Ahasuerus had his ministers. If we want to start there, we could even start there already. If we go to page 1252, right in the beginning, literally right in the beginning on verse 3, in the third year of his reign, Ahasuerus' reign, he made a feast for all his officials and his servants. The army of who? Persia and Media. Media is going to be Yavon, which we call Greek. Persia is going to be Pras. They're there together right then. So we have the story is Persia and Mede, and when you start reading through the story of Esther, that phrase of Media and Persia comes up many times. Ahasuerus was a Persian king. This was part of the Gullus, the exile of Persia, which ended after the story of Esther, and then we built the second temple. That's how it goes. So I saw this question for the first time. I can't believe you can get to a certain age and realize how we know nothing. It's scary. So Persia and that exile, Ahasuerus was a Persian king, which is part of the exile. Why do we read it on Purim? Because we're discussing Amalek and Haman. If it's a Persian kingdom, what is Haman, who is from the nation of Amalek, who's not Persian, not Median, what is he doing in this story at all? How did he rise to power? More so, the Vilna Gaon, who we just quoted, says that on page 1260, which is again the story, what happened was while we have 2 days celebrated of the story of Purim, because there were two wars that happened. There was the first day war that killed, it says right here, 500 people. Here it says in verse 5 on page 1260, and the Jews struck at all of the enemies with the sword, slaughtering and annihilating. They treated their enemies as they pleased. In Shushan, the capital, they slew and annihilated 500 men. Then they asked for another day. I don't know how much you know of the story. And then it says, further down on verse 16, the rest of the Jews throughout the king provinces organized to defend themselves, gaining relief from their foes, slaying 75,000 other enemies. So in the story of Purim, they killed 500 day one, 75,000 day two. The Vilna Gaon says, others seem to say it as well, that these 75,500, you want to add in Haman's son, another 10, Haman 11, all these people, were all from the tribe of Amalek. Amalek. That's what we're reading the whole story on Purim. Because Purim is all about Amalek and Esav and Agag and all that stuff. So the question that someone asked is, what are they doing here in the middle of Persia? Well, how do they rise to power? It's unbelievable. You get your whole life. You never thought of this question. Me too. What is Haman? How does Haman rise to power? He's got the wrong nationality. He's an immigrant. A lot of undertone politics today.
So it's Mordecai's
later on, but yes.
Well, I don't know, hour days later, minutes later.
No, but until now, Mordecai was nowhere.
The whole thing happens over the course of a week.
No, the story of Esther takes about over 10 years, around 10 years, yeah. Because it starts out in the third year of his reign.
Before they find the third year of the reign.
Right, be part of it.
The story of Haman, and Haman verse 4, whenever Haman...
No, but I'm saying, if you look at the things here, it said we just read before in page 1252 in the third year of his reign. Right, that's how he started. Now, then, in that major event, he kills his wife, and then he hires a new wife. When he hires a new wife, it says it here, it was the seventh year of his reign. And later on, if you want to see it yourself, it says it was the 12th year of his reign. So it's about 10 years during this whole story. We read it in about 45 minutes. But here it is. If you want to see on 1255 verse 13. Does it say it there? No, it doesn't say it there. Hold on. But it's in the 12th year of his reign. Here, I have to find it. I'm not finding it right now. But yes, it's a 10-year event. So here we have Haman riding the back.
The year going through the beautification process.
Right. So we have these major events. Question how long it takes, but it's over around a 10-year period. So we have, okay, you could ask on Mordecai as well, but we have Haman rising to power. And what some want to say is that Haman and Amalek, 75,000, that's a lot of people. And by the way, the 500 people the day before in the place called Shushan Abira. When you go through the story of Miguel Sester, slowly, the way we used to do it in this class, when one pasuk took us about 5 weeks, you find out there's a place called Shushan and there's a place called the capital Shushan. Two different places near each other, obviously, but not exactly the same location. Shushan Abira is the main city. The main city was obviously much smaller, much more limited, only ministers and high-ranking officials. So in the high-ranking official assembly, you have 500 people from Amalek, and then you scatter out, you have 75,000. But clearly they're a major force in this empire, that us discussing the Persian Empire is talking about killing off Amalek. So some want to say that Amalek integrated into that society and took over from within. They Trojan horse them from within the Persian society. And that's why they're all over the place there. And there's a difference between the way Amalek attacks Jews and everyone else. We said this many times in this class. We have two rabbinic holidays throughout the year. Everyone else is biblical. Passover, you got to eat matzah, biblical. Sukkah, Sitna Sukkah, biblical. Purim and Hanukkah are rabbinic. Purim and Hanukkah, because they happened way after Moshe Rabbeinu's time, the rabbis later on created two holidays. Why two holidays? Two different fights. One was the story of Hanukkah, one's the story of Purim. Yes, of course. But besides the two different fights, they don't make 1,000 holidays. We had a lot of fights over the course of Jewish history. We only made these two, because these two represent two different types of fights. There's a spiritual war against the Jews, and there's a physical war against the Jews, which means, in the story of Hanukkah, which is most exiles, we're given an option. Change religions, give up God, no one's going to kill you. It's a spiritual fight. Amalek doesn't offer that. Amalek, nowhere in the story of Haman, did he say, by the way, you want to convert, we're into that. It's an automatic death sentence. There's a physical annihilation that Amalek carries, which is why, years ago, before the thing we gave a couple classes on, that the Germans represent Amalek. Because the Germans didn't give you an option of converting. In fact, people who did convert and had children, the children were still going to be gassed. Because if you were one-fourth, one-eighth a Jew, what does that mean? There were people being taken away that said, I'm not a Jew. They didn't even know they were Jewish. Like, yeah, we checked the records. Your grandfather was Jewish. I was like, I didn't know that. I've been going to church on Sunday. There's actually a movie about the wives who did help or didn't help their Jewish husbands during World War II. A little fascinating. But the German Amalek side of things is a physical death. Achashverosh, if we read the story last week, he said, listen, you guys, if you want to enslave them, did we discuss that in this class? I don't remember. That was last week, 2 weeks ago. If you want to, the Aleph and the Ayin, if you want to enslave the Jews, I have no problem with that. I didn't say I want to kill them. Enslave means we make them one of us. We give them the chance to assimilate. In many of the wars in our history, we were given a chance. The Crusades gave us a chance. Assimilate or light them up. Right? I think they lit them up. They didn't do arrows, right? Maybe arrows also. But light them up, right? Many times, there's a spiritual war going on. Amalek is not a spiritual war. Amalek doesn't care about what we believe or don't believe. Amalek, it says about them, we read about them last week, below Yar Elikim, they're fearless against God. They have no fear against God. It's not a religious war. There's nothing we can do. We can't tell them, we'll do X, Y, and Z. There's no X, Y, and Z. There's no conditions involved. It's kill the Jews. Now, did it ever wonder? You had a question. You ever wonder What's with Persia? Hating Israel. Persia, by the way, has a new name. Do you know when the new name created? You know, there's this place called Persia until 1935. Did it happen in 1935? You did use those history. In 1935, Persia changed their name. What's the new name? Iran. Do you know why they called it Iran, according to some? I don't know if you could trust AI Google. But among the reasons they did is because the word Iran with an accent, the word Aryan. And they were realized in 33, 34, 35 that the world is turning that direction. And they decided, you know what, we're going to change our name. They sent out a public declaration because that is sent to all the nations of the world. We are no longer called Persia. We are now called Iran, which hints at the word Aryan. It's the same root word because they were representing themselves as Aryan. And some claim, it's hard to know what's real, what's fake, some claim that this was done from within. So wait a second, why are the Persians following the Germans and getting involved with our Aryan nation? The Persians don't look Aryan as far as what we think Aryan looks like. What are they doing there? Because the Persian Empire was infiltrated, Trojan horse, all the way back to the story of Esther. That's why the Persians shouldn't be hating the Jews that much. But they do, because it's not the Persian part of them. And by the way, as we said, they became great ministers in Persia. They became great ministers. They were in the city of Shushan Abira. Haman's up there as one of the top seven ministers. They have become infiltrated into the Persian Empire. It is possible to say, I saw someone say this last week, I was, whoa. That's possible to say that these leaders of Persia today are actually descendants of these infiltrators that came into the original game. It's a real hatred. And it's possible to say that this war, we spoke about that for sure a couple weeks ago, that the war of Amalek is going to last until the end of time. Dar dar, right? We discussed that the other week. That the Amalek war happens until the end of time. And it could be the end of time, time-wise, means that because Amalek is around, there are always going to be infiltrators. But I want to take this a step further. Go to page 848 first. So the first thing to know is that when reading the story of Esther, and it's a Persian Empire, we realize they were infiltrated. Here we have on page 848, the beginning of chapter 21. Look at this funny phrase here. The Canaanite, king of Arad. Now, Canaanite is not Amalek, obviously. Canaanite's a whole different nation. Right? Canaan, king of Arad, adds in a very interesting detail here, who dwelled in the south. Okay, is that important? Every word's important, but why? Heard that Israel had come by the route of the spies and had warred against Israel. Israel made a vow to Hashem and said, if you deliver this people, that doesn't sound very specific. This people, why don't they say the Canaanites, king of Arad? Does Rashi say it? Hold on 1 second. I would be shocked at it. Hold on. Yes, look at on the left side of the page, 849, under the 21, second to last paragraph. Who dwelt in the south. Left side. Here goes. The south was the habitat of Amalek. But the Torah identifies the king as a Canaanite. That does, you know, that's a contradiction in reality. The Medrash explains that the attackers were indeed Amalekim. But the Amalekim wanted to prevent the Jews from identifying their people in the prayers for God's assistance. Because he figured, you know what, the Jews pray, it works. So when he ordered his soldiers to use the Canaanite language, confused because the enemy wore uniform of Amalek, and spoke the language of Canaan, the Jews went vague and said, this nation. But here we see another time in history where Amalek infiltrates a foreign nation, pretends to be a foreign nation, the chameleons of chameleons, and get in, and our war against the foreign nation is really quietly against our eternal enemy called Amalek. As well, the Canaanites here as well. These aren't the only places. When you start going through the story of Amalek, look at this unbelievable thing. Page 176, but I thought you needed the Chumash today. 176, when we have Yaakov having his ultimate battle against the angel, which we say was the angel of Amalek, the angel of Esav is the angel of Amalek. And it's a very strange conversation.
Two different spiritual attributes.
Not necessarily. According to the basic interpretation, Haman, grandson of Amalek, grandson of Esav. Not grandson literally, but a descendant. The same lineage, correct.
But not necessarily the same spiritual force, because don't we say that maybe in the future Esav will do tshuva, maybe?
Yeah, okay. That's possible, yes. But we're going to go with genealogy for now. Not bad. So we're on 175 first. The struggle with the angel. Yaakov was left alone, and a man wrestled him, says a man, with him until the break of dawn. When he perceived that he could not overcome him, he struck the socket of the hip. So Yaakov's hip socket was dislocated as he wrestled him. Then he said, let me go. Very strange conversation. For the dawn has broken. That doesn't sound like it. My enemy is, as soon as things get bad, let me go, right? And he said, I will not let you go unless you bless me. So, in order to give a blessing, we just said ourselves a minute ago, when it comes to prayers, we want to get specific. That time, we didn't know who it was. They dress funny. They look funny. Okay, they switch it up. We get vague. But he says, listen, let me hear your name. What's your name? Yaakov. Then, Yaakov on 30 requires back. Divulge, if you please, your name. Okay, I gave you my name. What's your name now? What does the angel answer? This is Esau's thing. Why then do you acquire my name? And he blessed him there. He never gave him his name. Why then do you acquire my name? In Judaism, in Hebrew, when you don't have the vowels, we've said many times in this class, there are a gazillion words that can come out of your mouth. How do I know? Take every language in the world, every word of every language. Take every language times every word. That is a, I don't know what the number is, a gazillion, right? It's not endless. So if the Torah uses the same word, but two different meanings, it's a strong connection because we don't need two meanings for the same word. We could just come up with another word. The options are unlimited. And the same we say also as well, when two words that are not the same sound have similar interpretations, they cannot be the same interpretation. There's no such thing as exactly the same interpretation. We don't use two different words for the same thing. And we don't use one word for two different things unless they're really connected. And usually the connection is not based on how you say it, but how it's spelled, because we don't have vowels in our Torah. So the word for name is a two-letter word. Shame. When you take out the vowels, what else could that word spell? So one of the most famous things, it spells the word shum. Here or there, yeah, same idea, yes. Which means, which we've said in this class many times, the name of a person represents his essence of who he is. This is who he is. Here and there, his final essence. That's what we believe until today. Everyone in this room and your parents have prophecy. When? When they're naming you, or when you're naming a child. There's some prophetic vision, because you don't know the essence of what that kid is, and your parents don't know the essence of you. Because most people do not have enough self-awareness, sadly to say. So who decides? God decides. And there's thousands of stories of how the parents forgot the name they wanted to name the kid, and the rabbi guessed it correctly. Because he's noticing things that other people aren't. Literally thousands of stories. Because the name represents who you are. The name is your essence. So when Yaakov Avinu turns to the Tsar, the angel of Esav, which represents the spiritual power behind Esav, which potentially represents the spiritual side behind Haman, Amalek, all of these people. He says, what's your name? What's his answer? His answer is, why then do you acquire my name? Now, these words alone, you could put together an entire book of different explanations. Because these words, according to many Kabbalistic writings, is the essence of the evil inclination. Yaakov's fighting the evil inclination. Does it say that on top here? For sure, on bottom here, for sure it does. This fight of Yaakov is against the evil inclination. The struggle with angel. The rabbis explained that this man was, hold on, here it is on page 175 on top left. Well, not top, of the bottom top left. Was the guardian angel of Esav in the guise of a man. The sages of every nation has a heavenly power. An angel that guides its destiny on earth and acts as an intermediary between the nation and God. Two nations are very unique, Israel and Esav. Israel needs no go-between. It's God's own power. And Yaakov, because of his images in the grave than God's throne, nafas, Esav's guardian angel is different world of angels, for Esav's epitome is evil, Satan himself. So when Yaakov was asking Satan himself, what is your name? He's like, I want to know everything about you. I want to know your DNA. So his answer is going to be the secret answer to how we know to fight evil inclination. That's what it's about. This answer, what this means, he responded with a question. So I am telling you, there's hundreds of different ways of understanding this question. You can come up with your own, they're all good. But for tonight's class, we're going to say this. Why then do you inquire of my name? What he was saying is, I don't have an essence. I'm a chameleon. I change up all the time. You know what that means? When I'm with the Canaanites, on page 848, I look like a Canaanite, I act like a Canaanite, I talk like a Canaanite. When I'm in Persian Empire, I sound like a Persian. I rise to power. I'm in Shushan Abir with 500 of my inner people. I am a person that's a chameleon. And you know what that means? We said the other week, go check RabbiHubba.com, Charles loved that class. Dar, for the eternal fight, that the evil inclination of Asa will exist at the end of time. You know why it's called Dar? Because every generation has a different fight. Our evil inclination in 2026 is definitely not the same evil inclination that the Jews fought in 1926 or 1826 or 1726. I'll do better. Not the same evil inclination as 2022, 2023. Because as the world changes, As we change individually and as a nation, the evil inclination changes as well. So one day he tells you, don't get out of bed today. Not a good idea. And then a week later he's telling you, get out of bed early. Because he is malleable, is that the word? Malleable, right? Malleable, right? Malleable. He's malleable to our things. Now, as we change ourselves, because we are constantly changing as human beings. Today you're more angry, you're more lazy, you're more cheap, you're more funny. Whatever it is, depending on how you woke up in the morning, what you saw in the mirror, what you had for breakfast, if the carbs affected you the wrong way. Every second, you're changing. You know who else is changing along with you? Evil incarnation. He's saying, I have no name. There's no essence to who I am. You know what I'm about? Nothing. I'm going to change forever. How do you win a battle against someone who's changing forever? You got to know yourself. I have no confidence. Zero, sorry. Zero confidence that we know ourselves that well. That
you gotta be more adaptable.
You gotta be more adaptable. Who is the most adaptable person that I would think right now, thinking of it in the history of the world, who's in the Jewish lexicon? Is that what you call this? You know what it says? What we started this whole conversation with? Esther Amalka. You don't remember what it said about Esther Amalka? There was a fight going on in the beginning of the story. And Ahasuerus says out loud, you know what? I want Vashti to come out to the party. I don't know how much of the story you know. We discussed it years ago. In the story, the Gemara tells us this open Talmud passage, and they see it in the words. We went through it then. Because he says, just one of them, it says he wants you to come out with the crown. And the Talmud says he wants Vashti to come out with the crown and nothing else. Mm-hmm. Just the crown. Why? Because there became a fight. Here it says in verse 11 on page 1252, to bring Vashti the queen before the king, wearing the royal crown, to show the people her beauty. What's the beauty of the royal crown? The crown's beauty. What does that do with you? I like your cat. Doesn't mean you're good looking. You are. But I'm saying everything that goes on that way, right? I want to show her beauty by bringing out the crown. I'm reading you the words. In verse 11 on 1252. What does that even mean?
Just the crown.
Just the crown. Everything else? No. Why? That's a weird suggestion. We're in public right now. The fight began, the Talmud says, where all the nations of the world were telling Ahasuerus, you know who has the best looks in the world? Pick a nation. But every nation saying, we're the prettiest. We got the prettiest. And Ahasuerus says, no, you guys don't understand. You know who the prettiest is going to be? It's going to be Vashti. I'm going to bring out Vashti. And he tells Vashti, you come out with the crown only. Vashti being a regular person, which she was not. We discussed it then.
She would be more than happy to come on.
Right.
Who cares?
So we spoke then, by the way, just because he asked it. It wasn't a modesty factor by Vashti. It was an ego factor. You don't tell me to come out. I'll come out on my own. You don't force me to come out. I have no problem taking my clothes off in public, but not that you told me to do it.
Vashti had the lineage of royalty.
Exactly. 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 So the fight was ego, but the fight was about that. And then Vashti disappears from the story. And who comes to the queen? Esther. And the Talmud says, based on words, that every nation that the world held, Esther was one of them. The Medeans, the Mexicans, the Swedish, the English, the French, the Germans, everyone said, you know, no one knew who she was, right? They kept on saying, Mordechai told her, don't say who you are. Don't say where you come from. Ahasuerus had no idea who she was from. They knew she had something to do with Mordechai, but Mordechai had an adoption agency. We spoke about it a couple years ago. He had an adoption agency for the homeless, for the orphans. Oh, so the Talmud, the Gemara says that she had a certain look, almost like a chameleon, that within her look, everyone saw with their own glasses.
And quite literally said that she had green skin or something.
So the green skin, I don't know if it's literally green. I don't know what that means, green skin. Hulk, but it means, figuratively, it means that everyone looked at her and said, she looks like me.
Green skin, by the way.
Aha. Maybe that's what the Gemara used the word chameleon, the green. Esther was the ultimate chameleon. Everyone thought she looked like one of them. She had those perfect eyes that everyone says they look Chinese eyes, Japanese eyes, German eyes, Russian eyes. Everyone looks the same. Her entire look was a chameleon. She didn't say anything about herself. No one knew who she was. Everyone identified with her.
Her language was represented where she was from.
Mordechai spoke 70 languages.
So maybe she...
They couldn't figure who she was from. And you know what Haman's thinking? Haman's thinking to himself, not every, like in America today, not every, what do you call those groups, God forbid, that are in America, that they're activated, what do you call it, spy cells? Not every sleeper cells, right? Not every sleeper cell knows the other sleeper cell. Usually you don't do that, right? To protect everybody, everyone's got their own three people. No one knows anybody else. And Haman's sitting there, and he's like, I know what I am. I'm Amalek. I am nameless. I become a Canaanite. I become a Amalek. We can go through the story of Haman, of Amalek. It's amazing in the Torah. They keep on appearing in all places. It's just astounding. They're in Iran today, maybe. And Haman's thinking to himself, listen, I want to overthrow. I want to Trojan horse it. Come in from within and take over the Persian Empire. Kill all the Jews. No options. Kill all the Jews. But what else I got here? I got the best thing in the world. I got the queen of the White House. And I'm looking at her and I'm saying, she's one of mine. She is a chameleon. Nobody knows who she is. He's like very confident about it. And then what happens? The queen makes a party and only invites one person. He's like, he's not going to tell her. You don't say I'm a sleeper cell. Because, I mean, nobody says it, right? You don't reveal you're a sleeper cell until you're all, I don't know what the, I don't know if you ever reveal, but you're certainly until you make the official call, you get the call from the home base, sleeper cells activate. And he's thinking, oh, this is good stuff, man. She only invited me, the whole kingdom. You know why? Because she must have realized that I must have given my cards away in the poker match. Somehow she noticed me. But you know what? I noticed her too. So the ultimate way, like you said, is to get someone who's the most adaptable of all adapt. Do you realize what Esther's life was like? Esther grew up in the home of Mordechai. Bad news for all of us. If we met Mordechai Tzaddik today, we don't live. We're instantaneously dead. Our soul jumps out of our body to attach itself like a magnet to that spirituality. We can't handle it. We're talking unbelievable spirituality here. Esther's in that home. She's living the greatest spiritual life in the world. And then it's time, by the way, gotta go. Go where? Ahasuerus' house. Ahasuerus' house, if you remember the story correctly, is loaded with idols. God doesn't walk in place of idols. So all of her natural prophecy that she normally received on a day-to-day basis, hanging around spirituality, is gone because the spirituality doesn't walk into Ahasuerus' palace. She's losing everything. She's isolated from everybody. She's sent to an island of unspiritual places. She has to make up how she's going to remember the days of the week. So if you, the Talmud says she had seven different people work for her. So she always knew when Shabbos was. She didn't even know what day of the week it was. But she's keeping Shabbos. She's keeping kosher food. Locked away. But to the outside world, she's one of them. The ultimate sleeper cell chameleon. That's the one who's going to take out Haman. Our adaptability. When did the war of Haman begin? The original fight began when Yaakov stole the blessings. You know what's funny about Yaakov stealing the blessings? What did he do before he stole the blessings? He went into spy chameleon form. He dressed up as somebody else.
From his father, Isaac.
From his father, he dressed up as somebody else. Because he says the way to beat these guys is to get dressed up like them. What is Purim about? You know what we do on Purim? We get dressed up. What are we getting dressed up for? Because we're discussing the downfall of Amalek. So we're saying, listen, we could adapt as well. So what we have to do is realize potentially that the war that is going on now might not just be a Persian war, but it might be the word Aryan war, their word, not mine, their name, you can Google that, Aryan war going on, infiltrated by deep hatred, where there's no option of us saying, we'll do X, would you make peace with us? We'll do Y, we'll do Z, just don't try to kill us. Amalek doesn't give us that chance. There's no options by their wars. So what we have to do is, we have to adapt. The easiest way to adapt is when Amalek attacked us, the Torah tells us, the first time Amalek attacked us openly, as Amalek, was at the end of Beshalach, page 390-something. Hold on. Is it 390? Yes. Wow, that was impressive. Amalek came and battled Israel on page 391, but 390, in a place called Rephidim. Again, every time the Torah tells us a location, it means something. They came from the south. There's a location. Let's see what the word Rephidim means. Rashi says on 391 on the bottom, verse 8, by mentioning the place, the Torah alludes to the reason for the attack of Amalek. In Rephidim, Israel questioned God present. No, let's go to the second one. Bechilta, this is easier. But both of these answers are true. The word Rephidim is a contraction of the words they loosened their grip on the Torah. As long as the Jews were diligent in the Torah study, Amalek had no dominion over them. But as soon as their study became lax, they were in danger from Amalek. So what we have to do now is adjust. You know why I call it adjusting? That was his word, adapt. He said adapt or adjust. I'll tell you why I have to be adapt. Because in today's world, the hardest thing to do in today's generation. As I said, from 2026, it's not the same fight as 2022. You know why? Because everyone in this room is too old. Sadly, probably not true anyway, but too old to fully understand the addictions of the iPhones and the AIs and all this type of stuff. But we have to realize that some of the issues of these things are to make sure that we cannot study Torah. Because if your brain only works for a 12-second TikTok, I don't know how long TikToks go for, 12 seconds, then your ability to actually become great in Torah, that is not gonna happen. I hate to say it, it's not going to happen. So we have to adapt, adjust, and realize they're coming after us. There's a war going on. And hopefully, Mashiach reveals himself, the Karav, through not a three-second global disaster, but through us doing repentance and the revelation occurring. Till next week, Gabriel.
And so, Baba Shalach, the first instance where we saw Malik, was that after Kriyas Yamsuf when they were traveling all over?
That was right before Sinai. So yes, after so Kriyas Yamsuf, right before Sinai.
So why didn't we immediately kill them all out then and there?
The question: if we had the ability and the command didn't exist yet, the command to kill them occurs after the war. But there was, we set up a war.
Seemingly because of that.
Because of that war, right? After the war, because of that war. And a very good question. That war is what we're fighting today. We have to understand our question. So just hinted at it. Why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't get involved directly? He sent Yeshua to get involved. Maybe we could do a few classes on Amalek because we spoke about a couple years ago. Many years ago, actually. He spoke about that when Esther, let's do that again, maybe, that Esther's war against Haman occurred, we know, on Pesach. So we go from Purim to Pesach. We're going from the war of Haman to the story of Haman, who then was killed on Pesach itself. Because these weeks, we should say one thing to yes record, is that we know that a Jew is always supposed to fight in court a war against Amalek, or against everybody, in the month of Adar. So as long as we're in the month of Adar, we're in very extra. We're getting extra help from upstairs. Extra help. Let's seize the moment.
Amen.
Yes.
Oh, was over here.
So you were saying Saul was a Benjaminite. He didn't finish the job.
Esther
and Mordecai was a Benjaminite.
And Esther, right? Exactly.
Esther too.
Yes. 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 Yes.
The reprise.
Correct.
Was Lavan a Malek?
No.
Because Isaac says, Yaakov says to his intended, your dad's 1,000 ways, I can be 1,000 ways. Your dad's a tricky guy.
He is.
Right, right. I got to look into that. It's very good.
Maybe Lavan is also a Malek.
Right.
We know his.
Yeah. But I got to see if Yaakov the chameleon. I was only thinking of because the fight against Esau when he got dressed up, but not bad. Not bad. Yaakov was chameleon against Lavan, it says. He said, I'm a trickster. I can adapt to any situation. As long as you change the terms, I can change the terms.
And
good addition.
He was the white, so he was known. Lavan himself is...
Right? Looks good. Yes.
I was going to say that, like you were saying, Pesach was the actual decree, right, from when we should kill Haman? Or
well,
I'm sorry, that was the actual day that the war started? Or
no, so the 13th of Nisan is when Haman sent out the first letters. And the letters were that in 11 months from them, then, is when the story will kill all the Jews.
Yeah.
And Mordechai sent Esther in right then. And she said, I'm not going in right now. If I go into the king, he'll take out a scepter. I'm finished. So he said, okay, well, let's fast for 3 days. So the fast days are, again, around then, exactly 14, 15, and 16, those days of Nisan. And then Haman is killed, first day is Pesach. Then, later on, they send out the second letters that the 11 months later, on that day, the original date, the Jews should fight back. That's how the story goes.
So maybe I'm thinking of the 16th of Nisan. Like I remember learning a couple of weeks ago that it's like a special Indian to really go all out second day Pesach.
True.
Because that was, I guess, when that fast
very
ended
good.
Something like
they have, and when you go to some places, well, it depends on, you know, how much you pay for the hotel. But you did, right? How much you pay for the hotel in Chicago?
So when you bring the carbon over.
But they do have, right? They do have, the Hasidim have a custom to have a Sudas Haman.
Yes.
On second day Pesach. They don't need Hamantash because that's Hamas, but they do have a thing.
It's like a meal, right?
Yes, that's something else.